Welcome back to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is Thursday morning. That means it is time for Historically Speaking with our friends from Concordia Historical Institute. In studio this morning, Todd Zitlow from Concordia Historical Institute. Todd, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Doing good.
Glad to have you here this morning. A fun day for Concordia Historical Institute.
Absolutely. Kind of the high point for the year in some ways.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me a little bit about what's going on today with CHI.
Well, today is our awards program. So each year we grant awards of commendation for the best and most significant research in the area of North American Lutheran history. And each year we gather all of those authors or contributors to history and archives for our awards program. And that's happening tonight on the campus of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. And we'll have a nice dinner, introduce all the award winners, have a short message tonight by Dr. Harmelink. We'll talk about the future of archives or the purpose of archives. And it's just a neat way to raise up and celebrate the best research that's being accomplished in the area of North American Lutheran history.
Tell me about what you've been reading in preparation for tonight's awards, all the materials that you've been reading.
Well, you're going to catch me off guard because I'm actually reading everything from 2016, preparing for next year's awards program right now because the deadline comes up at the end of January. Some of the winners for tonight, we have in studio with us today, the Reverend Dr. Mark Granquist, who's a history professor at Luther Seminary in St. Paul. He's one of the award winners. He came out with a definitive history on American Lutheranism in 2015, and he'll be one of the award winners tonight. And so we'll talk to him a little bit. There was a number of articles written that come out of the Concordia Historical Institute Quarterly in 2015 that are also receiving awards, one by Russell Baldner, which looks at the Lutheran Lehrenstalt, the Log Cabin College, and he said that when he looked at the historiography, there was some inconsistencies in it, and so he sets about trying to make sense of those inconsistencies and find the proper path through those. There was a chapter written in a book by Russ Mallinson and Jeff Mallinson and Russell Dawn on the history of Lutheran education, and that they're receiving an award tonight. And then there were two congregational histories. Each year we look at all the congregational histories that are produced throughout the country in all of North American Lutheranism, and the very best of those congregational histories are awarded. This year, the two happen to be churches out on the East Coast, but really excellent histories with all of the historical tools that you look for in a history that make it useful for researchers. It's one of the areas that I'd really like to get the word out to my fellow pastors, to other congregations when producing a congregational history, is that they be sure to include an index. It really makes a difference when you're trying to find information. I mean, it's nice to produce a 400-page book that references hundreds of your members, but if a researcher can't find them, it makes it very difficult. And so I know a lot of money gets put into some of our histories, but they come in without indexes, and it makes it really difficult to use those as a tool. So if you're doing a congregational history, get your index in there. Yeah.
Word to the wise.
Yeah.
Well, as you mentioned, the recipient of the award tonight, the Reverend Dr. Mark Granquist, of Associate Professor of Church History at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. Dr. Granquist, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you in studio. Tell me a little bit about your work at Luther Seminary.
Well, I teach the history of Christianity there, modern Christianity, and I specialize in American Lutheranism. There are not a lot of us that actually do that anymore, but it's what I do.
What prompted you to study, to research the topic of Lutherans in North America?
Well, it was just a personal interest, actually. That's how I got started. I've always one of these strange people that I've always liked history, and wanted to know more, and I thought it was very important to get the word out about the history of our group in this American context.
Well, I have to say, just because one likes to study history does not make one strange.
kind of does. I watch them come through the office, and the historians are an interesting group of people.
Well, you know, but there is a sort of a general American antipathy to history for a lot of different reasons, and I have to coax my students out of it.
What is it? Why do you think that there is this reluctance to study history?
Partly it's the idea that America is a new country, and so that we are always looking forward and we're not looking back. Partially is that some of the teaching of history, especially in the high school level, is not very good, and the students just get bored with it.
What are some of the most valuable things that you've learned from studying history that really shaped who you are as a professor and what you're teaching and as a researcher and writer?
Well, I want to be a little cautious about saying, history teaches you lessons or anything like that, but it broadens your perspective. It gives you a sense of if you just look at the last, 10 or 15 years, then there's only a minor slice of history. If you can go back 400 years, that there's something more to be said for our tradition and a lot of different options. What we think is sort of normative in our present day churches maybe wasn't 100 years ago or 200 years ago. For example, we only started having seminaries 175 years ago. Well, where did we get pastors before we had seminaries?
Good question.
Yeah.
Your research for this book, for which you're receiving the award tonight, where did you have to go for, where did you dig in to really learn this history?
There are various Lutheran archives across the country and at the various seminaries. CHI has a very good one. The ELCA has one in Chicago. But what really brought this book together was actually teaching it. You know how that is. Sometimes when you want to learn something, when you want somebody to learn something, you make them teach it. And so the book grows out of a number of years of teaching this material. So I could, as I sat there writing the book, I could think to myself, now how would I explain this particular topic to one of my students or to one of my classes?
So as you read the book, Todd, as you were reading the book, could you picture him lecturing in a classroom?
You're presuming I read it. I leave that to other people. I just bring the materials in and then trust the committee to do its work. But I think when you look at the field of North American Lutheran history, Dr. Granquist, I mean, it's been quite a while since there's been an update on a textbook that focuses on Lutheran history. I mean, is it Dr. Nelson's book that came out, and that was, is it 40 years ago?
Yeah. Part of the reason for writing this book was sheer necessity. I was using this book that was 40 years old, which is a very, very good book. I'm not going to say that. But, most of my students wanted to know what was going on in the last 30, 40, 50 years of American Lutheranism. And so I figured rather than explaining it all again and again and again, I'd write it down.
As you study this history, as you learned this history, were there significant events in this history that it really stood up for you that were very intriguing that you wanted to dig in and learn more?
The event that came out of this book, the event that that really galvanized me in terms of thinking about it, was all of the changes that were occasioned to American Lutheranism by the First World War. America was only in the First World War for 18 months. But the amount of change that happened in American Lutheranism as a result of those 18 months is astonishing. I had a chance to go back and write a chapter in a book on American Lutheranism and the and World War One, but the transition to the use of English, the transition to American culture, all those sorts of things like that, it was astounding.
There was actually a paper that's getting an award this evening, also written by someone from the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod, Stephen Gergel. entitled The War to End All Germans. And he's looking at World War I on the basis of from the perspective of the Wisconsin Synod. So kind of that same idea, though, that World War I was just a significant turning point. I mean, that certainly was true in the Missouri Synod with the use of the language shifting over to English shortly thereafter. There was just a lot of cultural pressure because of the antagonism towards German sure. German nationals.
And yeah. it's amazing how quickly that linguistic transition happened. Yeah.
And because of the quick transition from German to English, what do you think are some of the things that resulted from making such a quick transition? Were there things lost in that transition?
Well, I suppose, yes. They really struggled. I mean, the linguistic transition is just as a technical thing, you know, in other words, being able to use a language. You know, most of those people knew how to use English even before the First World War. It's a question, for example, a more conceptual question. How do you do Lutheranism in English? And for example, this is what a lot of the newer immigrant groups from Africa and Asia are also struggling with. I mean, this is an ongoing problem. But nobody had ever really done Lutheran theology in English before.
The confessions...
Yes.
We're in German and Latin, right?
Absolutely. And so it's not just if anybody's ever used a translation program on your computer, you understand that translation is not a technical thing. You know, it's an art. And so for example, the big thing that came out of World War I was the question of what in English, what words in English, what terms in English best... expressed the Lutheran understanding, for example, of the authority of Scripture. You know, that's a huge issue. You know, what words do you use? And when you use English words, they have freight, and they're usually non-Lutheran freight.
Because they have their own history that leads up to it. And
absolutely.
The conceptual development was all in the German language. That's certainly... I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but it's something that missionaries run into all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
When they're out in the mission field and they're trying to translate the biblical text into the language of the people. I mean, it's one of the areas that gets studied at CHI a lot is the Chinese term question and what word from the Chinese language was used for the name of God. And how is that going to communicate to the people in China a proper understanding of a Trinitarian God in their own context, but using their language when they had no tradition for that?
So it all goes back to Babel.
Well, there's part of that. You mind if at this point I put in a plug for the people at CHI?
Go right ahead.
Plug away.
I've been using their archives this week, and it's the CHI is a marvelous resource for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and I don't know that they get enough credit and support in this, but it's an amazing archive. It's an amazing group of people. It's not just a collection of documents. That would be easy if it was all about warehousing, but. In how they try to make the synod history useful and real to people, archives now are facing huge challenges, especially in the 21st century with the electronic age. Trying to think about how to preserve the history of American Lutheranism. From websites and emails and blogs and other sorts of things like this, it's not just. I mean, they're having to go and do things in a way that's completely different, and I'm really worried as a historian about the resources that we have available to actually maintain our most recent histories. I'm worried that we're going to end up, you know, in 50, 60 years, knowing a lot more about the 19th century than we will about the 21st century.
Because everything's digital.
Because
and
everything's
so
digital, and how are
not
we
gonna, tangible? Yeah.
For example, a website. All right. How do you archive a website? You can't just take a snapshot of it. You're going to have to, and at what point, you know, websites are always constantly changing. They're, you know, so how do you know that you're going to get all the materials that you're ever going to need for studying the history of this particular point in time? It's a huge challenge.
I mean, I even look at the presidential files that are held at Concordia Historical Institute from past synodical presidents. And of course, the ones from the 20th century are all paper. Mm-hmm. There's all paper communication between all the theologians, all the lay leaders, you know, all their correspondence available. Well, as it goes through the 20th century and we become closer to our modern age, like the first presidents that were in office during the computer revolution, they printed them out. They printed out their emails. And so we do have that correspondence. But my concern would be that...
How do you curate all that?
Yeah. And the more... I mean, that was back when there was still a real connection to paper. And I think there was an instinct about, you know, let's get this on paper. I think the longer we stay in the computer age, it's easier to just... think digitally, and I wonder about the correspondence that's happening at the top levels of synodical entities, whether it's parachurch organizations or theological discussions with sister churches. Where's all that correspondence going? Because I would doubt they're printing it out, because I just don't know that that's a part of the thought process anymore. So that's part of our job at CHI, is to try to educate the current workers in Synod, the people who are in the positions where they're producing material that's going to be of interest to researchers, is to try to find a way to preserve that digital record.
A challenge that we certainly face. We have just about a minute left before we wrap up. The events going on tonight, a fine celebration, and then, as you mentioned already, looking forward to the coming year as well, looking at the things you're reading this year to prepare for next year's celebration.
Yeah, so if you're interested in seeing who the winners are this evening, the program itself is essentially full. We had to get the numbers in, of course. But you look at our webpage or our Facebook page, ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org, or on Facebook, we're under at Lutheran History. We'll be posting pictures from the event tonight, and we'll certainly be printing posting a listing of all the winners from this evening. There'll be 17 people who are, well, a few more than 17 people, but 17 products that will be awarded this evening. So if you're interested in that, stop by our digital outlets and you can see those. There'll also probably be something coming out in the LCMS Reporter, so you can keep your eyes for that too.
All right.
And another thing you can do is to join CHI and support its work.
Absolutely.
Amen.
ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org. Find out more about the event going on tonight, as well as supporting CHI. Thanks so much for being my guest this morning, the Reverend Dr. Mark Granquist of Luther Seminary. Thanks so much for being here this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Todd Zitlow, Concordia Historical Institute. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a little bit, morning prayer. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO.